This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer. All right, I'm here with Mr. Jared Foster. He's an author. He's a photographer. Well, first of all, he's a photographer, but he also is a Peach Pit author. He's got a brand new book called Storytellers out with Peach Pit. He's a professor at Texas Tech University. And just a great guy. He's in Lubbock, Texas, trying to stay out of the wind. And he's
blowing 30 miles an hour today.
30 mile an hour winds in Lubbock, Texas. Nothing to stop the wind. So it's nice and flat. So Jared's here to talk about his new book, Storytellers, which I have up right here in front of me. And just photography in general. This is our first time hanging out, our first time having a conversation. So... I just want to say thank you, A, for writing the book, and B, thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. So there's a lot to talk about. I mean, we were talking about you're working on a PhD, you're a professor, you're a photographer, you're a workshop leader, you're an author. Dude, where did all this start? Take me back with, you know, like, you're 18 years old. Did you have any idea that you're going to be doing all this stuff later?
No, and when I was 18, I wasn't even shooting a camera. I was getting ready to come to college, and I actually, fortunate or not, I'm teaching at the university that I actually went to for my undergrad and my master's and now my PhD, but, I came in, this always throws people for a loop. I'm a photographer, but I have 2 degrees in agricultural communications. And so I grew up on this big cow ranch. So I didn't have the typical Texas life, but I had the stereotypical Texas childhood.
Wow. Were you milking cows shearing sheep and all that?
Well, I did shear my share of sheep, but we didn't have a dairy, but we had just meat production cattle, and so I grew up close to Fort Worth, you know, kind of the cattle hub of the state, and then got through high school and came out to Texas Tech to study agricultural communications, and along the way I started working for different magazines that were a part of the agricultural industry. I was mostly just writing, and then as part of my degree program, I had to take a photography class, and I really took full advantage of the opportunity to be both creative and as a member of the media to take advantage and learn as much as I could about photography during that one semester. I had drawn a lot when I was a little kid, and I started playing music, and I toured with a band for about 6 years while I was in college, and so, you know, I just needed another creative outlet that was kind of me. And so whenever I picked up the camera, you know, I just kind of went full force into it. And I tell my students now that, you know, during my sophomore and junior, maybe even my senior year, I didn't have much of a social life because every free chance I had, I was 30 miles outside of Lubbock just driving back roads and trying to find, studying color, because out here where it's completely flat, there's all you have is the sky lot of times.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe a windmill. And so I spent a lot of time studying color, and I fell in love with it. I shot a little black and white, but I was more interested in, shooting chromes. And so that's kind of how I got into it. I took one class, and I kind of taught myself beyond that a little bit. And then I fell in with a photographer named Wyman Menzer, who is actually the state photographer of Texas. And he taught a class one day a week at Tech, but he also led a 15-day field course, the one I taught, I just got back from.
Yeah.
He taught that course before I did, and I met him one day outside of class, and I said, hey, I'd really love to take that course. We sat down for like an hour and a half, and just talked, and we learned that we had pretty similar backgrounds, and I ended up taking his class, and then that summer I decided, you know, this is something that I want to be doing professionally, so I implemented it into what I was doing with magazines. I started freelancing, and basically, you know, that's kind of how I rolled into it. So, I wasn't exposed to photography at a very early age at all, but, I was always doing something creative, I assume, and then that's kind of what led me into doing this.
You know what was interesting about the book that I was going through it is, I like the idea of like you talk about taking a topic and going deeper into that topic rather than just, hey, I'm going to go out. And this is what I talk about when I go on photo walks, you know, or when I lead photo walks. You don't just go out there and put yourself into a situation and say, oh, okay, I'm going to take some pictures.
Right.
What you go into in the book, which is awesome, you go into, like, there's a story in there, right? There's a, instead of taking a picture of some random barn, find out why that thing is there and, you know, who owns it and, you know, put the farmer's daughter next to it or something, you know?
Exactly. Well, and it could be, you know, say you have a lot of these, and I have a lot of these images that don't have any context behind them that I know of. I just thought, hey, this was a pretty shot at the time, and I'm going to take this shot because there's a lot of nice things photographically working for me.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, I'm an editorial shooter, so a lot of the stuff that I shoot has to have context. And so if I, you know, if I get a wants list from a magazine that says I need shots of, you know, Paducah, Texas, then my shot of that barn at Paducah, Texas, I need to now find some background to it and be able to write a little cut line for the image. And in doing so, I've you know, inserted a little bit more story into that image, a little bit more context. And that's what, you know, hopefully that's what, you know, I'm trying to get across in the book is that, you know, we may take all these really beautiful shots, but, you know, they say something different to everybody that sees that particular shot.
Yeah.
And the more information that we can provide either visually or with complementing text then or audio, then I think we're doing a better job at of being a storyteller.
Where do you think things are going in that respect? Because we, on This Week in Photo, we talk a lot about multimediographers and specifically how photographers are having to move away from being single purpose tools, you know, capturing an image and into more of, you know, being tasked with capturing video, capturing audio. I mean, even this, doing hangouts, and I mean, it's digital now. It's not just the silver halide or the slide, right? It's now motion and audio and all that stuff. Where do you see that stuff going?
I think you nailed it. I mean, we're going in that particular direction where it's necessary for especially editorial shooters to be a little bit more diverse in how they tell story. You know, whether they're, I mean, obviously proficiency using technology is a great thing, and I think you know, the folks that are really successful at this are doing that. But being able to see story, you know, exhibited in a way that, you know, multimedia captures it, or at least lets us portray story is better. We're better off for it. I was one of the things I'm really excited about staying at Texas Tech is the program that I teach in. You know, photography is just a component. There's broadcast media. We even have our own radio station within the program that I teach in, and then we also have a big push toward online content creation. And you know, one of the things that I'm actually going to be in charge of teaching to some degree is development storytelling through the multimedia environment. And, you know, there's still a lot of reverence for the still image. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm a photographer and 90% of my assignments are still photography based. Yeah. And, you know, and somebody else, maybe a multimedia director, may take my images and compile them with, you know, with somebody's audio or somebody else's video and whatnot. You know, at the same time, I think it behooves us to take advantage of being able to put together multimedia content productions so mm-hmm. easily. And like, you know, again, the technology is fairly easy to get down. And I say that with a grain of salt, obviously, that there's a learning curve to it.
Yeah.
But it's being able to understand how we can use multimedia to tell story that really helps us, you know, throw our names out there or produce just better story.
Yeah, I just remind you. Remember, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day when multimedia and photography together meant these multi-projector slideshows set up on a grid that were triggered by pulses coming from a tape, and you know, it looked great, you know, but it was just this massive sort of like rock concert of projectors to do like a 20-minute slideshow, you know, to do the multimedia, and now we can do that kind of stuff on our phones.
Which is, exactly, yeah.
You can do it on your phone and make it look better than what they looked like back then. So it's just, it's amazing where things have come.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, think about stereoscopic slides, you know.
Yeah.
Back in the day, just that desire to somehow achieve some sort of feeling of a third dimension to the image. Yeah. That's still a still image, but at the same time, it's grasping a little bit more technologically toward, basically evoking some other more visceral feeling out of the viewer.
Yeah. Yeah, and giving you more of a sense of place, like you're, I can kind of feel like I'm in the image rather than just looking at it on one plane.
Yeah. You're talking about those big projections and stuff. That reminded me of like rides or just simulations at Disney World.
Yeah. It's crazy where things are coming, and it's exciting. You see where things were, where things are, and you try to... I can't even extrapolate where things are going to be, in 2020 or something in our craft. It's just crazy how fast things are moving.
And I think a lot of us, we have to take it in stride. A lot of us, somehow, I say a lot, I don't know, there's no statistical number about this, but there's several of us that will gripe about these advances and these changes, but at the same time, they're just ways for us to do our job.
Yep.
I think if you love your job, you'll adapt. And like I said, 90% of my work is still just stills.
Yeah.
I shoot some stuff for like government agencies that is video and stills, but when it comes to the actual production end, or beyond me just shooting, I'm actually probably working in conjunction with somebody that says, hey, let's also make a multimedia slideshow out of this to post online.
Right.
So. I think our roles that are defined, if I define myself or you define yourself as a photographer, you're still seen as a photographer and you're hired based on that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I said, it helps whenever we have the knowledge to be able to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, but like you said, the evolution of the photographer and the definition of the term photographer is changing, mm-hmm. right? Whereas if 20 years ago, if you said, hey, I'm a photographer, it meant something completely different than it does today if you tell somebody you're a photographer.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone presumably today, generally speaking, in the developed world can take an image and expose it correctly and share it to millions of people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Whereas before it was limited, right? All that was limited.
Yeah, and we're all exposed to enough images to know that, if we just took our time, anybody, if we just took our time with our iPhone, we'd produce a pretty decent looking image as well, beyond exposure, compositionally, aesthetically, it might work for us. And we notice these things because I don't know what the numbers are, but aren't we exposed to something like a couple thousand images a day, like imagery?
Yeah.
That has to be conditioning our minds somehow, visually to see pictures. And so, the question is there context to the images? Is there a story behind it? I think I've said story enough in the past 4 or 5 months that, it's kind of almost become like, am I saying this too much?
No, I don't think you are. I think it needs to be said. So let's talk about that. So your book, like we were talking about before, for the folks that just joined us, it's called Storytellers, and the subtitle is A Photographer's Guide to Developing Themes and Creating Stories with Pictures. So take me through that. So why did you write the book? Because this is a substantial book. It's awesome. It's put out by Peach Pit, and everybody knows Peach Pit does good work.
Yeah,
so, when you pair a publishing company like Peach Pit with a talented photographer author, you get this, right?
So thanks.
So where did it come from?
Well, it started with a conversation between me and Ted Waite, which is you probably know him.
Yeah, I know Ted,
acquisition editor, we honestly, David DeShimon had just put out one of his books a couple summers back, and I had tweeted saying, hey, I'm really looking forward to this book, and Ted got in touch with me, and we started talking about just different topics. At the time, I was writing a field lighting, a fairly regular field lighting series on my blog, and I was enjoying it, and I wasn't trying to write it like, this is how you light things. I was trying to write it in that, this is how I lit it in order to say this, or in order to compliment the story that I was shooting, and also to be very practical about it, because I think we have some folks can light with 140 flashes, but not all of us are Joe McNally. We don't have the resources for that.
Exactly.
But anyways, the we got to talking about that. Some time went by, and we started talking about it again, about doing a book project. And I told him, I said, I think the Lottie market may be a little saturated in terms of books. And you know, no offense to anybody that's writing a book on Lottie right now, but I said, there's another topic that I'm really interested in writing about. It's something that I try to convey to my students as much as possible in the class is the story. We're shooting to communicate anything. Whether you're an art photographer or you're straight up photojournalist, you're trying to say something with your image.
Yeah.
Audience sizes differ and all that kind of stuff. But the people that I've respected the most in the photography industry are those people that talk about the context of their images. When I started working with Wyman Menzer, I learned that more so than a photographer, he was a historian. And I thought, man, that's kind of what it's all about. It's not really all about photography per se. It's all about what we're doing with it and what we're saying with it. So anyways, I told Ted that I said, I think there's this notion. We've got a lot of great how-to books, like the lighting books, and we've got like Joe McNally's books are awesome. I think that's he's one of the reasons why I was really just really grateful for Peach Pit and I to start a relationship, because there's people like him writing books for them.
Totally.
But anyways, we have lighting books, we have these how-to books, and then we also have these vision oriented books, which are DeShimon started that, and mm-hmm. they're great books as well. I think they complement stuff like what Michael Freeman is doing with The Photographer's Eye and other authors that are writing along that line. And then I just said, I think maybe the next step in the conversation that this line of books is doing is story. And me being an editorial photographer, I was all about it. And so anyways, we jumped on board, and that's kind of how it came about. And so I really, with this book, just wanted to talk about, what we're doing with our cameras and why that is important. Like, why is depth of field important to story? What does it mean for somebody else to look at it? So instead of us as photographers looking inward and thinking, I love the bokeh, the soft bokeh in the shot. Now you're thinking, well, I love the soft bokeh in the shot. Stylistically, that's me.
Yeah.
But what is it also saying to the viewer? And that's something I put food on my table being a photographer. And so I had to, yes, be creative, but also have to know that in order for me to sell images, an editor has to think that an audience will like that image, or the editor thinks that it will complement the text in a magazine story, and the audience will think that as well.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's interesting. It's like, we as humans identify with story, right? We've been telling stories since the beginning of when we could tell stories, right? Hieroglyphics and caveman writings.
Like we have vocabulary and terminology just because somebody had to explain what something is. Here's a rock. Well, what is a rock? Well, to explain what a rock is, you have to give it context. And one of the easiest ways to do that is through narrative.
Yep. Yep.
So
now, so there's the storytellers. How did, like, when you put this thing together, take me through the process from beginning to end. Was it, how long did it take you, like a week to write this, or two years? Or
pretty much.
Yeah. This is a week of work right there.
It was, it took a little bit.
Jared, the king of understatement.
I wrote, we fleshed out the outline, the chapter table of contents and kind of the synopses of all the chapters in about 4 months. And that was just the process of getting everything approved. And so we had started the process in January of 2011.
Yep.
And after Ted and my conversation, and then by April, I was a go. And I'd also really had pretty much like 3/4 of a chapter already written.
Good.
And so basically from April until October, I think October 1, that's how long it took to finish it up. And I was shooting assignments and all this stuff in between all that. So, I wasn't full time on the book, but at the same time, I taught a 15-day field course or 18-day field course in Spain last spring, for Texas Tech. After that, I spent 16 days in Scotland. And, you know, I kind of did the whole, you know, cliche, I need to go find a cabin just to, so I can concentrate and start getting words down.
Nice. Hemingway. So, nice.
I found a sheep farm in Scotland. And I drove up from Edinburgh to it. And so I had a car, and my brother was with me. And so we just stayed in this cabin for a while, and then we'd switch places. But we just drove all over Scotland, you know, shooting, and I'd write and stuff.
Oh, that's great. What a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was kind of cool. And, you know, I was over in Europe anyways, and so it wasn't expensive to get to Scotland as long as I had my return flight back to the States. And so I just went there and spent some time writing and really fleshing out the rest of the book. And then that was it. And so, and then when I got back, I just kind of started writing everything piece by piece, and it came together, I think, fairly well. I owe a lot to the editorial team. Like I said, Susan Reimerman was an awesome editor, and Peggy Knotts was the copy editor, and she and I had a lot of interaction basically on you know, style and flow. But
yeah,
I mean, they're a good group. I mean, Peach Pit was awesome to work with, and you know, like I said, hopefully I have the opportunity to work with them again, because they're just, like I said, I loved the way that process went. I co-own a publishing house here in Texas, and we put out coffee table books, and usually like one a year. I think next year we're going to have out three or something. But you know, it was a different process than what I'm used to directing, because I'm usually the editorial process in that particular entity, but this was a great process to go through, and like I said, I mean, working with them and you know, writing knowing that you know, this book was going to be out there with some really well thought of books, and it came out with Vincent Laferre's book just come out, who else, Steve Simon's book was, I mean, that's an awesome book in general. And Chris Orwig's books had just come out, and then whenever I arrived back from a month on the road, I got a copy of Exposed by
nice Michael Clark. Yeah.
And he's interviewed in the book, and so, I mean, there's some really heavy hitters in the industry writing for them, and I, like I said, I just felt very gracious and a little bit intimidated. But at the same time, it was like I said, it was a nice process, and hopefully the book is worth a paperweight or something. So.
No, it's worth much more than that. So, okay. So before we close it off, I want to talk a little bit about your work at the Texas Tech University. You're a professor over there, right?
Right. Yep.
So tell me about that. I mean, what's the day in the life of a photography professor at Texas Tech University?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out. You know, it was a lot of fun. Actually, I was approached after I'd finished my master's in 2007. I was approached to teach some photography classes, come on as like an adjunct faculty member over in mass communications. And so I thought, well, this would be a great opportunity. I like to teach, and my parents are both high school teachers, and you know, I think it's probably just, I was just around education a lot, and I'm one of these super nerds that likes school, I guess. But you know, when I was given the opportunity, I really appreciated the gesture, and I really enjoyed teaching. I thought, hey, you know, I'm going to be teaching students that are just as fired up about photography as I am, and you know, for the most part, I've been able to do that. And you know, then I started working on my PhD and getting that thing knocked out of the way, which it's nearly done. You know, nearly done in the PhD world is like it could take another year. But it's hopefully it'll finish up soon. But anyways, yeah, it's a nice process. I'm around a lot of people that are, like, again, you know, passionate about photography, and because I'm in mass communications, I'm around a lot of people that are interested in communication and working for the media, working editorially, but also very, very creative people. And so that's been a lot of fun. I get to, my role as a teacher there is very satisfying for me, because I get to take my experiences in the industry and kind of, you know, and just bring them into the classroom. And so every time that I show an image in class to convey a point, I can also say, well, this was shot for Texas Parks and Wildlife magazine for this particular story, and then this is why this fit for them. And I can also talk about, you know, why exposure is really important, because, you know, or focus, you know, that's probably a big thing right now. You know, why focus is important for learning photographers, because out of focus images don't sell. And, right. you know, that, and again, that sounds kind of, you know, like I just want to sell images, but at the same time, if I want to push my work as a photographer in this particular industry, then I need to take care of certain things. And so I'm able to take this into the classroom and hopefully, you know, students appreciate it. Like, you know, whenever you and I started talking to each other via email, I was down in a little town called Junction, Texas. And, mm-hmm. If anybody's ever seen the movie Junction Boys, about Bear Bryant's Texas A&M football team, that's where I was. Tech owns it now, and every year for the past 8 years, I've co-taught a class down there with Wyman Menzer, and it's just a 15-day field editorial photography class. And so we take students that are interested in that type of work, and we just run them through photography boot camp. And so it's they're kind of advanced students. They've already taken a couple photography classes, and then they come down there, and every morning we're up like at 5 o'clock, and we've left the campus by 6:15, and we're in a river, or we're in, you know, in a field, or we're laying down in front of rattlesnakes, and you know, we'll shoot for a little while, come back, edit, have some conversations about the images, and then, you know, 3 hours before sunset, we load back up, and we're out another place at another location, and we take a long 5-day field trip out to the Chihuahuan Desert during this whole time, and shoot some really cool, you know, areas, some interesting subject matter, some interesting people.
Yeah.
So it's just it's a lot of fun. And again, it's all in the purpose of putting the student in the shoes of, you know, or in my shoes, or in Lyman Menzer's shoes, or, you know, anybody else's shoes that does this type of work. And I love teaching here, and I love, you know, being able to at least have the ability and the freedom to take what I know about the industry and what I've learned, you know, through a lot of bumps and bruises that I'm still making, and bring it into the classroom.
That's great. That's
so great. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And
so what's next for you? So you got a book, you got a professorship, you're an author, you're a successful photographer. What's next? Are you going to leave Lubbock and go move to New York and become a big commercial shooter, or what?
No, and I told you, I love living in West Texas. There's something, you know, culturally pretty unique about the place. Like I said, a lot of people, especially a lot of people from Texas, say they're from Houston, they come to Lubbock, and they're just like, after my 4 years is done here, I'm out.
Really?
It's really windy, and we have huge sandstorms whenever, you know, they blow in during the spring. You know, they're like haboob style sandstorms.
I don't know, Jared. It's sounding a lot like Mars. I don't know.
Well, we have more grass than Mars, but maybe not this year. I just shot some stuff for the Texas Tribune and the New York Times on the drought situation here, and
yeah,
you know, the whole nation went through a big drought, but we were hit pretty bad. But you know, I like it here, and honestly, I'm just concentrating on the new professorship and you know, teaching and just keep pumping out more work, and you know, hopefully, like I said, I'd love to be able to continue my relationship with Peach Pit and mm-hmm. write some more. You know, once the fall starts, then I mean, it's back. Summertime for photography here is not great, especially stock photography. But once the fall hits, you know, it's just 100 miles an hour again. Yes, plus, I have a new family. I've got a new baby.
Oh wow!
We're kind of.
You are busy, man. You are busy, busy.
Yeah.
You know, congratulations on that.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Okay. So you know, customarily, I always ask people where can people go to find out more about you? So where's your website? Where are you on Twitter? Are you on Google Plus? All that stuff.
Yeah. Just jaredfoster.com. That's JERod. You know, it's one of those names that can be spelled a million different ways. And
yeah.
So jaredfoster.com, and all the buttons are there to find out blog and where stuff is. And I'm pretty sure we're about to redo that whole website, but at the same time, it's still there. And then I love Twitter, my Twitter handle is just at Jared Foster. I am on Google Plus. It's one of those non-name tags, so you just have to search Jared Foster on Google Plus.
And
of course, I'm kind of one of those weird people that, you know, since I'm a photographer, I don't have a photography page on Facebook. You know, if you just say, I want to be your friend, you know, be my friend. Yeah, that's where you find me. Most of the time, though, I'm, you know, either at my website or I'm on Twitter. I really spend a lot more of my time social media-wise on Twitter. I need to be a little bit more productive on Google+, but
Yeah, well, it sounds like you got too much to do.
being busy.
So. Oh, yeah, I agree. Well, hey, man, well, speaking of being busy, thank you for taking the time to do this interview today and hang out with me on Google Plus. It's been awesome and inspiring. I'm almost through your book, so I'll let you know what I think once I get all the way through. So far, I'm blown away. It's awesome. It's amazing.
Great, man. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, Jared. Have a good day.
All right, you too, man.
Yeah, bye-bye.